Well, let's bring in our good friend Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
15 and a half thoughts.
We're taking half the thoughts, so yeah. 15 and
you're
a half
baked of 31
one.
Thoughts.
We have 15 thoughts and one half baked one. How's it going, Jeff?
I just put the ball on the tee for Friedman. Hey, Friedge, what do you think about that? Well, have you considered it from this angle? Welcome to the podcast. How's it going today, boys?
We're great. We're great. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Always fun.
Well, we're just talking a little bit about the Canucks power play last night. It's interesting how cold the Canucks power play has gone, and then you look on the flip side at Chicago and they are absolutely red hot, and it just came apparent. I mean, the Canucks need a power play quarterback on the blue line, defenseman. Obviously Edler being out, that hurts things, but before the arrival of Quinn Hughes, I mean, in the interim, what solutions exist?
It's funny. I had a long talk today with I was working with Brian Burke and Doug McLean before, and the conversation turned in the green room to the Vancouver Canucks. And I said, you know, hey, guys, you know, you guys have run NHL organizations before. Look at Vancouver right in the playoff race. As a general manager, do you owe it to your team, you know, to help them? Do you try to get some help in considering the Edler injury? Do you try to get some help, to your point, about the Vancouver Canucks power play? And they both kind of said, like, look, this is wonderful what's happened to Vancouver, how hard they've worked, where Travis has them right now, but you can't lose sight of the big picture here. You know, the owner wants to make the playoffs. That's obvious. The players want to make the playoffs. But they both said, you know, maybe the best thing you do is, you know, you add a depth defenseman or two, but that's about it. You don't lose sight of what the long-term plan is here. You just sort of treat all this as if it's gravy, and you don't go and, you know, mortgage any part of your future at all. I mean, unless a miracle deal falls in your lap, so you kind of just say to yourself, this is a great experience. This is a great run. This is fantastic for all these young hockey players, but let's not lose sight of what we're really trying to accomplish this season. So as much as it may be frustrating for the day-to-day, hey, let's get the power play clicking again. You know, we're right in the thick of things with, you know, everybody in the West who's chasing playoff spots. The consensus around the room sort of was, don't do anything rash. Maybe add a defenseman to help you with the Edler injury, but that's it.
Yeah, and that's essentially the consensus here, too. Like, don't mortgage your future. You're still a few years away from being a good team.
No.
And, you know, the biggest, you know, issue facing the Canucks, really, in my estimation, outside the first-round pick they have this year is, what do you do with Brock Besser and his contract? We saw Austin Matthews sign his, and he's not a direct comparable to Brock Besser. But one thing, the reality is salaries are going up, the cap is rising. And when it comes to Besser, he's on pace for another plus 30 goal season at 29-62 last year. And if he hits that mark again this year, can you afford to sign him to a bridge deal, or do you have to sign him long term? Because if you give him to a bridge and he scores more goals in a couple of years, then you're paying even more. So how do you navigate the Besser negotiation this summer?
And that's exactly what happened to PK Subban as well when he did that bridge, and then after that, you know, wins the Norris Trophy, and now you really have to pay. I think he's an Octagon guy. He's represented by Mike Liut's going to have a big summer. He also represents Rantanen, and he represents Patrick Laine as well. And the one thing we've seen with that agent is, you know, he's not afraid to wait. There's no hurry. But the difference this summer, and this is what complicates everything, and we haven't seen this for quite some time. You know, there's the number, and that's the Austin Matthews number. So we all think that's going to be the ceiling for everybody. If they're coming in on, you know, 5 years, if you're going to go longer with someone, then certainly the number rises as you buy UFA years. But the one thing complicating all of this is, I think, guys, for the first time, in I don't know how long, I think general managers think that offer sheets are going to be real, are going to be something that occurs this offseason. When you have a crop like Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine and Brock Besser and Matthew Tkachuk and Mitch Marner and Sebastian Aho and Charlie McAvoy and Braden Point, it's spectacular. I mean, it's stunning. And when you see veteran general managers like Ken Holland, you know, who once upon a time would come out and say, no, there's no chance of offer sheets. They don't work. So I don't think that anybody's going to use them. Instead, you have Ken Holland saying, well, if we think it'll help our organization, it's a legal mechanism in the CBA. You know, there's some teeth to this idea that offer sheets could be a reality this offseason. So I think you say to yourself, you know, who do we want to set the prices for our players? I mean, certainly the Vancouver Canucks will match any offer sheet that comes in for Brock Besser, but do you want it to even get to that point? And is that going to end up costing you more money? You know, I sort of raise the analogy that it's much like a fight in the NHL, and it's not actually the fight itself that acts as an influencer of, you know, what you end up doing, but the threat of it, which is more important. And ask anyone that's ever played, the threat of a fight does more than the actual fight itself. That changes behavior. So I think if you're the Vancouver Canucks, much like if you're the Calgary Flames or Winnipeg Jets or Carolina Hurricanes, Toronto Maple Leafs, anyone else that has a big ticket RFA come July 1, I think you very much keep that in the back of your mind. And agents have as well. That's why I think agents are happy to wait. Now that, you know, Nylander was done and then Matthews was done, you think, okay, you have a ballpark. I can still see teams waiting to see what actualizes with offer sheets. But for the first time, it's a legitimate threat. And I don't think Vancouver's any different than any of these other teams that may feel that one of their players may get an offer sheet. Well, a long-winded way of saying he's going to get paid. We just don't know where the decimal point's going to go because there's an exterior threat to all of this.
Well, exactly. And it's going to be fascinating to watch this summer especially. And it's going to be the norm going forward when you look at the quality of young players coming in. And how it, year over year, it seems like. I mean, yeah. This year seems like an anomaly, but I predict in a few, it'll be the same thing. Like, it's the way the league is going. And so then you start projecting forward, and that's what teams need to do. And you look at Pettersson a couple years out, his deal, and then you're like, well, let's start looking at guys who aren't even on the club, like Quinn Hughes. Like, you start looking at your salary cap and how it's constructed. And I found your conversation with Elliot fascinating on the podcast this week about specifically with the Leafs and how they're not worried about like Matthews, Tavares, like those guys are going to deliver at a certain level, but it's all the other pieces around them and how you support those guys. And you see the polar opposite in Edmonton and the failure of them not being able to support their top players. And I guess the question I want to ask is, because I remember we had you on early in the season about the Vancouver Canucks, and you questioned sort of the thought of paying $3-4 million to all these support players. And like, how dangerous is it if you're the Canucks and you've almost built this backwards that way? You've built the supporting cast at those price points, and then you're projecting forward with all the superstar talent they have as well.
You never go wrong, I don't think, Alex. I don't think you ever go wrong when you pay your superstars. You know, you bring up the Edmonton example. You know, look at what they're paying Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. It's enormous, but that's not the problem.
Right.
The problem are the contracts to players like Milan Lucic. That stings. The contract to Chris Russell. That stings.
Or like,
you're never going to get in trouble with that.
You guys pointed out there's like $8 or $9 million not even on the roster of cap space. Like that. Like it's crazy. In
The last moves of Pete Chiarelli are all in the press box. It's you know what, $8 million, $7.5-8 million. That destroys you. Like that crushes you. Even look at the Chicago Blackhawks in their situation. Taves and that $10 million is not going to hurt you. Kane and his $10 million is not going to hurt you. What's going to hurt you is the Brent Seabrook deal. Mm-hmm. It's like when you start paying players that aren't your elite guys anymore big money, that's what's going to end up killing you. And in a lot of ways, you know, this is interesting, Alex, because I think we're all on the same page that Tampa has as good a chance as any elite team to win the Stanley Cup this year. It's a fantastic team to watch. They're a fascinating team, but their roster construction to me is so profoundly different than anybody else in the NHL in that, you know, sure, some of the top guys sort of take haircuts when you consider, you know, lack of state tax. You can understand why they did it. So that's why Stamkos comes in at 8.5. But, you know, they're going to be paying Kucherov, you know, $9.5 million starting next year. Braden Point, where is his decimal point going to end up? That's going to be an expensive contract. You still have Andrei Vasilevsky to do after next season. That's going to be an expensive ticket. And the one place where Tampa I find fascinating is, unlike other teams, the top guys tend to take a little bit less, but the middle guys get paid. You know, Yanni Gourde, $5.1 million. Alex Killorn, $4.5 million. Tyler Johnson, $5 million. JT Miller, $5.2 million. Ryan Callahan, $5.8 million. Like, Tampa is heading into a major cap crunch, and it's all about what you and I were just talking about and Elliot and I talked about on the podcast, Alex, and that is when you overcompensate your middle to lower guys, that hurts you way more than, paying John Tavares and Austin Matthews the big bucks, whatever Besser's going to get, the whopper of a contract that Pettersson's going to get when he's due. When you overcompensate in the middle or your lower half, that's when you really start to get in trouble.
Well, and that's where Edmonton is at right now, right, Jeff? And
we look at
and
big time.
And what where do they go from here? And here's the fascinating part for me for Edmonton. They have seven years of McDavid left, and they have to be honest with themselves. All you got to figure out now is you are where you are. You're in this hole. How do we maximize the most years possible out of the seven? And does that mean you take a step back for a year or two and have five good years? Because, hey, trying to throw more good money after bad is only going to worsen the situation. And I know it's hard for the fans there to understand this and the owner to realize, but isn't the best move to take a step back next season so you make sure you don't waste all 7 years of McDavid?
It's complicating all of this is jerseys hitting the ice and suites not getting renewed. And how you've tarnished the brand, and it's all very much non-hockey issues that influence the hockey team, and I can understand that. We all understand that hockey's a business, and even more immediately, sat like they have a big decision on the horizon sooner than later. You know what happens when Andrei Sekera's conditioning stint in Bakersfield is done, and there's $5.5 million that is going to enter the equation for the Edmonton Oilers. Now, Brian Burke, my work with this afternoon. He seems to be of the mind, and I don't disagree, that of late we've seen Cam Talbot start a lot of games, and he was really good last night against Minnesota. It wouldn't surprise anyone, certainly Brian, if that was the showcase and they ended up moving Cam Talbot to make that space. They've already made the investment at Koskinen for the next 3 years after this one at $4.5 million. So he is their guy. Right now they're shining up Cam Talbot to trade him and so they can move Andrei Sekera back in. But I don't disagree with you. Like there's some surgery that needs to be done on this team. And unfortunately, this is a squad that in those final weeks of Peter Chiarelli's tenure as general manager, it's almost as if he made moves thinking that Andrei Sekera wasn't going to come back as quickly as he ended up doing. And then all of a sudden you have Brandon Manning, who's at 2.5 a copy, not just this year, but next season as well. You have Alex Petrovic, who's not in the lineup, but you have a lot of quote unquote dead money that's up in the press box, but still counts against your salary cap. I don't have an easy answer for Edmonton. I know they have whom many consider to be the best player in the world. And Dreisaitl, just passed the 30 goal threshold, the first German hockey player to ever do so. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is still an elite NHL hockey player. After that, you really have to have a good hard look at yourself and say, what are we doing here? Because have we surrounded our superstar players with enough complimentary guys that we can be successful, not just for a one-year run, ultimately to flame out in the conference final, but for a long 4 or 5 year run? And I don't see it right now with this lineup at all.
Well, and you mentioned the Oilers tarnishing the brand, and I think this is really interesting because we saw for a couple of years that Connor McDavid, that effect, that draw, it was an attraction for free agents, right? There was like, okay, let's go play with this guy. And we're seeing something similar, I think, forming in Vancouver and how it relates to the Canucks. Like Pettersson, Besser, what they're doing and that excitement obviously makes them more attractive to free agents than a couple of years ago when those guys weren't even in the equation. So it's so important, though, that you pick the right free agents because – you look at the Oilers, and they go all in on a guy like Lucic, and nothing against him, but he hasn't performed up to that level. And then everything else surrounding it brings them down, and then that star factor, it's still there, but it's not as attractive. So how important is it to pick the right guys when you go out in free agency to bring them in to complement your stars?
It's crucial, and now it's easier for Vancouver. I mean, let's face it. Pettersson changed the game. Pettersson changed everything for Vancouver. All of a sudden, where Vancouver was looking at a certain amount of years for a rebuild, Pettersson shows up, and all of a sudden, that rebuild is on fast forward. And as we've seen before, when you have star players like him in the lineup, and you have players like Horvat on the squad, you mentioned Quinn Hughes on the horizon as well, you're starting to see the formation of what this next wave of Vancouver Canucks competitive team is going to look like. It becomes easier, and you can be selective. The worst case scenario is you take, you just sign whomever will agree to sign with your team. But when you have someone like Pettersson and you can go to a free agent, you can say, how'd you like to play with Pettersson for the next 5 years? All of a sudden that becomes a really attractive, like, first of all, you don't have to sell the city, right? That's the one thing Vancouver does have going for it. Unlike some other Canadian cities where you have to, you know, really, you know, sell that, you know, it's the team and the compensation and all that. And they may come back at you with, well, what's it like to live there? Vancouver doesn't have to sell that. Like, everyone knows how fantastic it is to live in Vancouver. That's all done. All you need to do is sell the quality of the team. And Pettersson changed it. Pettersson completely changed the fortunes of the Vancouver Canucks. They're already rebuilding, but now that rebuild, I think, it will take even shorter just because of how much of a superstar this guy has become. Like, look at, I'm sorry, but that goal last night, we talk, and you're a goalie, Alex. No, Bricky made up the funny point today. He said, no goaltender in the history of the NHL will stop that shot. No one. Alex, is that as close to the perfect shot as you've ever seen? It was fantastic.
Well, I mean,
That's changed the organization. It completely changed your organization.
It hit the goalie in the head and, like, went in. Like, it glanced off his ear. Like, I've totally. I mean, that was incredible. Great pass, which you spent a lot of time dissecting before you joined us.
And yeah.
What a finish. And I just wish that Pettersson would be able to get that one-timer off more. Like, it hasn't happened nearly enough, because almost every time he gets all of it, it's in the net. It was incredible last night.
Well, we always have to remind ourselves, he's a rookie. You know, we're doing all these things, and we're treating him like he's a 5 or 6 year pro. He's still a rookie, and it's frightening to think. And you guys are closer to it than I am, but every time I talk to anyone in Vancouver, in the organization, they'll tell you this guy is just 24/7 hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if this guy is plateaued. This guy is still hungry. This guy is still eager. This guy still lives it. Like, he's like Connor and Edmondson, right? Like, mm-hmm. These guys are hockey, and that's what they crave, and that's what they eat, sleep, and breathe. So I know, like, you look at it and you say, oh, wow, you know, I want him to get that one-timer off more. Don't worry, because these great players want to do that. And as you well know, having played in the NHL, they'll figure out a way to get it done.
Yeah, he's a hockey savant, but he works as hard as anybody. And that's what makes him truly special. And it's a lot of fun to keep
an
eye
on him.
And you
know what? And it's players like that. And this is why I think Sidney Crosby always should be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Because when your best player is your hardest working player, and Alex knows this better than you and I, Sat.
Yeah.
When your best player is your hardest working player, you're embarrassed as a teammate not to work that hard, because the work ethic, the work rate has been set so high by the superstar that if you don't follow, or if you don't at least give an effort similar, if not identical, then you can't hang on the team.
That's like me working with Aldi, right? I mean, I got to bring it every day. If I don't, you know, he sets
That's
the
right.
standard.
What was it? I wasn't paying attention. Sorry.
Yeah.
Putting in my lunch order.
Yeah. Sounds about right. He is Jeff Merrick, courtesy of Sportsnet. Also does work for Hockey Night in Canada. I know you don't see yourself as that, but you do in a 31 Thoughts podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Jeff Merrick. Hey, Jeff, we always appreciate your insight. It's always fun to chat with you.
That, Alex, always a pleasure, boys. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Sportsnet 650.